What is up, everybody? Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Anti-Gravity Group podcast. My name is Braden Carlson.
I'm Taylor.
My name is Shane, or as you might know me, Posthart.
And I'm Joe Barnard.
Sorry. I forgot.
What?
Are we live?
I advised Taylor to stop using his last name because everybody just calls him Jesse. And when you said that, it all came back to me as to why, and it was funny again.
Yeah, I knew that was going to happen.
No. So sorry to cut off your intro there, Joe, but welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're our first recurring guest. I feel like if anything, leaving that in will really cement that your name is Taylor, not Jesse.
Yeah, perfect.
It is.
It never does. It never does. But
no,
you know,
I mean, it's just like I'll be Brandon forever. Nigel the Rocket Cat has popped in hello.
Here to plug the merch as usual.
Yeah, let's hear. Yeah. Let's hear his merch plug.
Do you want to tell him, Nigel?
No, it always takes a bit of coercion. He doesn't like to be put on the spot.
Yeah,
usually something like. Something like
that's I think that's rocketvlogs.com in cat speak typically
is, he's still new to the influencer game,
right? Yeah, he's a little camera shy. I mean, he'll be on, but he just kind of likes to be a background character. You get the SAG insurance and everything, have his one speaking line here and there.
We are also joined, and this is not going to be that interesting. We're also joined by my cat that is actually not my cat. There's a stray cat in my neighborhood that I named Traffic Cone because he's orange and white. And I've been feeding him and like trying to get him to love me, and it's kind of working, but I can see him outside. He's eating dinner now. He's like not stoked that I'm looking at him.
Cat distribution system doing its work.
It is. Yeah. It is.
If you want to borrow the merch concept and throw some Traffic Cone the Rocket Cat merch up, one here would be offended. All orange cats share the same brain cell, after all. So
he is for sure not in possession of it. Not anytime recently.
All right. Well, last time, Joe, you joined us, we kind of just thrust you into a competition to design a rocket. We kind of skipped over the whole interviewing the guest thing, operating under the assumption that anybody who knows we are probably knows who you are as well. But
it's hard not a lot of people know the stuff that I do because I don't publish anything online or.
Yeah. You know. And that's the thing is you've always you've really kept to yourself.
Yeah.
You never want any sort of interaction or input.
I don't tweet 30 times a day about the dumbest stuff. Yeah.
I think you mean Zeet.
Oh, my God. I don't post on X. How about that?
Yeah. This is so destructive. The one social media, our network that had its own, verb for posting on it. And it's in the garbage now. You see what I X'd yesterday? Anyway. So we figured we'd take it back to the drawing board, and we're going to operate under the assumption that the people who are watching this podcast or listening have never heard of you before.
Right.
And so
Who's
with that,
Joe?
I guess. Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
Who is Joe?
Yeah. So I'm sure you are familiar with the fact that Joe is the owner and proprietor, I think is a good set of terms there, of BPS Space. And we're going to dive in a little bit. We'll really get to know Joe with this one.
Wow. Powerful stuff.
And then that's another merch concept. Some t-shirts to say get to know Joe.
Yeah. I sign off on that. I'll buy a shirt.
All right. Perfect.
I have to stop buying merch shirts. I don't know how casual you want this to be, but I have way too many merch shirts at this point.
That's okay. See, I have the same issue with bands because when I was in a band, when bands would be on tour and they're barely scraping by as we open for them, and they're we don't know if we have enough gas. So I always buy a shirt, and now I have so many. And yeah, it becomes a thing.
Yeah.
There's a whole three quarters of my closet that just never gets touched, and then I cycle through like the same five shirts on a weekly basis.
That's how it goes.
And that is truly one of the most riveting Rocketry-related concepts out there. But maybe we'll dive in here. So the first question we ask every guest we have is, how did you first become interested in Rocketry, and how did you get started?
I think mine is mostly pretty common. When I was a kid, my dad and I like went out. Actually, my sister too. We went out to like the hobby store, bought a little Estes kit. And my dad had done rockets as a kid. He was more interested in airplanes. But yeah, you know, like the pretty classic thing, like you take a Saturday afternoon, you build a little rocket, launch it at the park, and then it like gets stuck in a tree. I actually don't think we lost any rockets as kids. Like I can't remember losing any of those. And then I didn't do it for a little while. I did a little bit of rocketry in high school, but it was super informal. I was much more interested in like first robotics. And music, which is why I ended up going to music school. Didn't do anything rocketry related. They don't actually teach aerospace at music school, which is like strange.
Interesting. I thought that was like a core class thing.
Yeah, I did too.
Believe it or not, I knew well before I graduated that I didn't want to work in the music industry. So I just started like filling up credits with bullshit. And I took a class on natural disasters and a class on oceanography at the Berklee College of Music. And they were pretty fun. They were taught by the same teacher.
Yeah, I was going to say, they probably didn't have a lot of volunteers for that position.
Yeah.
Does anybody want to teach this?
Great teacher.
Why is that on? That's an option? Yeah. You know, just because.
But yeah, then I graduated in 2013 and worked in film and like video for a little while. And now I'm just telling the story rather than how I get started. But like the real part where I like started doing rockets and then like did not look back was around like 2015. In the summer of 2015, I bought a few more Estes kits and was like really sick of my job doing video stuff. And I didn't even know if it would work. I kind of just wanted to try some new stuff. And I started filming two different episodes of what I called the Joe Barnard Rocket Program or something like that. And like none of that footage is seeing the light of day at all.
How'd you come up with the name?
Yeah, it's really creative, right? You're like, I don't know.
It's like Taylor's channel.
But I filmed videos of me putting together these Estes kits and then launching them in a park. And I lost two rockets that way. Anyway, yeah, and like that sort of snowballed for a couple of months, and I was like, wow, I want to do stuff that's way more complicated. And that's the point where I was like, oh, I could see a path to, if I did a really complex project and did it in a really public way, I could try to get an interview using that at a company so that I could change my job and stop filming weddings, which like, I like weddings. I just hate working them. and gets really old.
That's interesting. That's the opposite effect that I've shot a couple of weddings, just doing photos, and I don't like being at weddings, but like if I'm there taking pictures of it and I'm not like forced to interact with people, I'm pretty down with it. Getting paid helps a lot. Actually getting paid to be there is a big one.
That turns out to help with a lot of things. Like, yeah. That's just yeah, like a little life tip. If you can manage to get paid for stuff, it's pretty good.
Right, yeah, I've found that to be, I mean, because when you get paid for things, you can pay your bills, mm-hmm. you can buy rocket motors, for example. Yeah, so yeah. That is a great tip from Joe Barnard himself. If you can make money, do.
You should do it. That's actually not always good advice, but yeah, anyway, that's pretty much the start. That's pretty much the thing that got me into it was, initially, it was like, you know, I did a couple of rockets as a kid, but what really like has stuck around a lot longer is I just wanted to work in aerospace. I thought it was so inherently cool. And I figured it out later than the date that I needed to figure out where to go to college.
Right. You missed the that's interesting because Taylor and I both have very similar starts, but instead of taking a break from it, it became our entire personality through our teenage years. And both of us did hit that window for going to like aerospace and engineering schools, and then we both dropped out. Yeah. So
unfortunately, that was the only box we had checked was interested in rockets. Let's go into engineering school. Literally none of the other things that were required.
I actually think I might have ended up doing the same thing if I had gone to engineering school. Like, I'm not very good at math. I'm not really good when someone else is giving me directions of, like, these are the assignments you must complete. And I think part of what made it easier, I mean, it was difficult to learn a lot of this stuff without a traditional path through, like, you need these first principles, then you, like, move up to whatever. But part of what made it a little easier, it was all self-directed. So, like, if something was difficult, I didn't have finals. I didn't have, like, you know, stuff that would stress out a student normally. And I kind of think, like, it would have made it less fun. And yeah. I don't know. I'm just trying to rationalize going to music school.
That, I mean, it is what it is. It's like, I thought for some reason after years of doing the absolute bare minimum that I could and finding every loophole to showing up to school, I would want to go to school for 4 years and, like, do thermodynamics and calculus and stuff. So, yeah, it didn't take very long for me to be like, wow, this sucks. I'll go be a writer, I guess. But, yeah, so the questions kind of funnel in from all of our episodes of the past. So there's a pretty stark drop off here from this happy, feel good, welcome to rocketry thing. So my next question is, what do you consider to be your biggest failures in rocketry thus far?
You're looking at it. It's me. I don't know. Can I actually, not to... The soundboard is so funny. You got to keep using this.
It's so laggy.
Really quick before I answer that, I'm going to try to reset my camera because it keeps glitching out. If it doesn't come back, we'll figure that out. Hold on. My issue is I don't know if the camera is showing up anymore.
No, it's black for us.
Yeah, no, that's the same for me. Uh-oh. Folks, I made this way harder. I'm so sorry. It says it's uploading stuff. Dude, Brayden, I'm so sorry. No, I just wanted to fix the flickering.
Well, probably have to leave and come back, right?
Yeah, should I rejoin?
Yeah, that's fine. We can. It'll stitch it together automatically.
Okay, I'll be right back.
Wow, he could have just said, I don't want to podcast with you guys. Well, actually, my camera stopped working.
Okay, you can see me?
Yep.
We were joking that was your
sorry
easy out.
You're just like, oh, man, yeah.
Big issues. Oh, that's really funny, too, because you ask like a harder question. I can be like, oh, guys, sorry. I got to go.
Oh, something
came up.
Let me
fix my camera. Bam, gone.
I don't know that I have a good answer. If you want it, we can like do it again. I don't know how you want to edit that or just leave it in. But the question being, what's like your biggest failure, right?
Yeah. Let it roll.
It's not so much a... I can think of mostly just like irresponsible decisions I've made. And like sometimes I've gotten away with them and sometimes I haven't. Like doing Lumineer was like a really big mistake to do it the way I did it. So for people who aren't like super duper fans and know every single detail about what I've done I spent a lot of my last, you know, like 8 years or so in rocketry doing thrust vector control and flight computers and guidance systems, but all of it happened at the scale of like no more than like an F or a G rocket motor. So they're tiny rockets, relatively speaking, and, you know, they fly. I never broke more than, you know, 1,000 feet, basically. And most of the time it was closer to like 100 or 200 feet. So having never done anything super high power, I did get my level 1 and my level 2 on the same rocket. I didn't do it in the same day. And I still think it's like a great achievement if you can do them on the same day. Although it makes some people get really mad about it. And I think that's stupid, but, I got my level 1 and my level 2 on a 4-inch rocket that was largely just cardboard. And then I jumped to try and do my level 3, but instead of doing anything like sensible, I tried to fly an N1100 minimum diameter, like composite FinCan. That's a 6G XL rocket motor. That is like an enormous motor. I tried to fly it with my own custom avionics, with live video downlink, with a 1.5 kilogram reaction wheel to like control the roll axis. I tried to do it with single SEP dual deploy, or sorry, single SEP dual deploy. So it wasn't a cable cutter. It was a tender descender on the main. And anyway, the overall point of all of these details is to tell you, like, this was an enormously complicated project and it was irresponsible to take it on. Not that, like, you know, you can't do irresponsible things, but I should not have done so much for one flight because it made the flight fail. Like, I didn't think through all of the complexities of that project before doing it. And I just, like, rushed headfirst into this massive rocket that, like, you know, once you get to the scale where you start having to think about, like, oh, we actually need multiple people to carry this thing, it gets really tough. Like, the difference between using an X-Acto knife to cut a piece of cardboard and then being like, I need to go into the garage, put on a respirator, get the Dremel, cut out this fiberglass. I can't patch it after, like, so I think I wouldn't call any one thing my biggest failure. I can just think of, like, Lumineer was really irresponsible and I should have done it in a different way. I made a rocket out of entirely out of hot glue. I got it to fly, but
I mean,
it took like 3 months of time, and that, like, did not, you know, it's weird to try to balance, because I try to, you know, I pay for these things with Patreon and with YouTube ad revenue and sponsorships and whatever, and like, that project did not recoup any of that cost. There was so much time devoted to doing this stupid project, and I like thought it would get a ton of views, and like, most people were not super interested in it.
It was so crazy too. I remember thinking that, like, as you're milling out these molds, I was like, oh my god, this was so much money.
Yeah, no, and that's what, that, like, I was hoping the absurdity of how hard I went on that project would push it out to more people. And this is a tale as old as time. Like, the stuff that you think is going to do well online never does. And it's the stuff where you put in, like, 30 seconds of effort. Like, I carbonated milk once, and a lot of people thought that was really funny. And, like, you know, that video took, like, 10 minutes to make. And the video that takes 3 months and a ton of money and a lot of effort, and I had to, like, subscribe to the Fusion 360 4-axis toolpath stupid Autodesk subscription. Like, anyway, I'm not going to complain about it. I've made a bunch of decisions, some of them good, some of them bad. I don't think I have a single biggest failure, but it's more just like, you could look at that and be like, why did he spend so much time and effort on this? And I also have that question.
I think there's something to be said, though, about the fact that you're like, yeah, this huge failure was me doing this crazy design work and spending all this time into doing something no one's ever done before. So I don't...
There's right, still, you make that sound cool as if I'm pushing, like, technical boundaries, and what I actually was doing was, like, inhaling fumes from my hot glue toaster in my garage.
I don't know. I feel like people have always... there's always been that outstanding point of research to be like, how much hot glue is it possible for one person to use? And
I mean, I would say me as a 6-year-old, that's pretty much my would have been my dream. I was just enamored with hot glue for whatever reason.
Me as I'm a like, 20-year-old loved
yeah,
it.
No, I'm 30 and I am still there. And I haven't grown out of it. I will tell you, like, doing any modifications on a hot glue rocket is a breeze. It's awesome because every single part of that rocket can be changed in shape with a little bit of heat and a little bit of time. And like, that's it. You can build whatever you want on a hot glue rocket, change the shape. You can make cutouts. You can make a cutout and be like, ah, I'm going to patch that up. And it's exactly as structurally sound as it initially was.
Well, it does make me a little bummed out that it didn't perform well. I think that's going to pull the plug on my Play-Doh rocket I've been working on secretly.
Dude, if you want help with the Play-Doh rocket, that sounds amazing. I will drive to where you are and make a Play-Doh rocket with you.
Maybe like clay that we actually like put in a kiln, and then we have a pottery rocket That'd be super easy to recover.
Can you, I mean, your JB Weld rocket still had like fiberglass airframe, right?
Yeah. The current one?
I think there's opportunity to do a more biblically accurate JB Weld rocket.
I thought about roll wrapping a G10 fiberglass tube with like thin JB Weld to wet the cloth out.
Oh, I mean no fiberglass.
What, pure JB Weld.
Oh my yes, God. Just exactly. Like mold it?
Yeah. I think you could. We'll get, I think you could.
We'll yeah. get It'd you like so an heavy. Outer mold and then an annulus inner mold or whatever. We'll fill the whole thing with JB Weld and you'll create a body tube out of it. It'll be like a half inch thick. You could so even, dude, Brayden, if you want to get crazy with it, you could even do like some Kevlar fibers in there to like give it some strength.
Yeah. See how fast we can push it.
This is the thing. Well, that, like
at that with weight, not very.
You're right.
This is the exact type of conversation that led to the Hawkloo rocket and that is at present leading to the meat rocket where I want to cook a piece of meat by going fast. But The thing about it is like, really, these conversations should stay conversations for the most part, because like actually doing the JB Weld rocket, I do not think you will get a return on your investment.
Yeah, I see. That's like the 12-inch rocket conversation that turned into there actually being a 12-inch rocket in Taylor's garage, and we were like, "Wow, that was really
all of our
expensive
stupid projects."
Yeah,
really.
And then we were like, "You know what? That was a lot of fun, but it was really expensive, and like it's huge. It's inconvenient to transport." Getting on the pads kind of a nightmare because it weighs 200 pounds. I think we should probably build another huge rocket.
Isn't that strange, by the way? Like, once the rocket becomes uncarryable by one person or difficult logistically to move around, the whole thing becomes like such a problem.
Yeah, it's
and
really
it's hard
funny.
To, it's hard to understand that until you're like, wow, I need to get this thing horizontal, and it's like a dangerous thing to do.
Yeah. When I was younger, I went to Vern Knoll's house, and he has a rocket called Starfire. It's a 7.5-inch rocket. It's like 15 feet tall. And I was like, why don't you fly that thing anymore? He's like, because it's huge, and it's just inconvenient as could possibly be. And I was like, nah. And I built a 7.5-inch rocket that I was supposed to use for my level 3. And when we flew that, Taylor and I quickly realized how much of a nightmare even that size rocket, like there's 7.5-inch rocket kits, but it is a layer of complexity that, like you said, doesn't really come to mind until it's actually time to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like everyone who wants to go work for SpaceX or an aerospace company is like, you know what I want to do? I want to like design the impellers for Raptor, or I want to like do, you know, something really cool. I want to work on the grid fins or GNC or whatever. And like, actually a lot of those jobs are like, I am designing a cart that rolls the rocket around and I'm doing like structural analysis on like wheels that move a rocket across the shop floor. And like, none of that stuff. That's like the, you know, the uninteresting part of aerospace is big logistical problems that you don't think about until you're like, dang, we got to move this.
Yeah.
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 And well, even at our level, like, we build a big dumb rocket, and then we got to figure out, oh no, how do we get it to the launch? How do we ground test it?
Yeah, yeah, like right.
All this
yeah,
extra
thing,
layers
it's one
of
thing
stuff.
To like ground test a 3-inch rocket in your backyard. It's another to like set off a bomb in your neighborhood. You know,
it was so loud.
It was so loud. It was literally like it sounded like an M80. It was
Taylor's
nuts.
Got a big backyard, but those neighbors that day were probably still just like, what just happened out there?
Can you imagine if we would have been in like a subdivision?
Yeah,
like just yeet the nose cone like 200 feet. I don't know how far that went across the field, but
yeah. I did that crazy. Actually with my 6-inch Red Max. I tested it in my parents' front yard because the backyard was full of dogs and it was such a big open tube, a 6-inch fiberglass tube that it was just like this super concussive, like low, just
feel it in your chest.
Echo. Oh yeah. And then like 5 people up the street just like poked their head out the front door. I was like, my bad, I'm just over here playing with rockets, don't worry.
Oh my God, it's so embarrassing too. Like I'm always really, I'm like, I gotta run inside and have no one see me.
Yeah.
So I found the pro gamer move, at least the thing that I do now, is I have 2 houses like directly on either side of the place that I live. And before any type of like energetic test or whatever, I'll just knock on their door and be like, it's not even, I won't tell them like something big and loud and scary is going to happen. I'll be like, do you want to see something cool? And if right. you like invite them in, then it's not, they're concerned because their sketchy neighbor is like firing a bomb in their backyard. They're like, wow, I got to see something cool. And like, I find that usually the thought of like, why does he have this much black powder? I don't feel like that usually crosses their mind.
Yeah, that's a good thing to not have neighbors wondering about. That takes me back to when, for LDRS, when it was at Lucerne, me and a couple buddies got an Airbnb in Barstow, and I was like, well, I got to test my Pyrodex pellet igniter here. So I just like threw it on the dirt ground in the backyard and fired one off, and there was just the next door neighbor was like looking at us out the window. I was like, huh. Yeah. I wonder how well they know the homeowners.
By the way, before we move on, I did bring this. I did bring the Dr. Pepper for the audio listeners.
Oh, nice.
I have a full Dr. Pepper. It's not the diet. I will not stoop to that. And I brought a glass for it. This is a wine glass. For the audio listeners, it's a wine glass with a pink fuzzy on the bottom, and it says birthday princess in pink on it. So we're tossing the Dr.
Pepper. Awesome.
In that.
Yeah, Joe's a full strength DP guy.
We'll let diet DDP.
Do we want to call it that?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
All right, cheers, fellas. Yeah,
maybe not. Maybe, yeah, cheers.
Oh my gosh, you're all on the diet?
Yes, sir.
Ah,
yep.
I'm outnumbered. All right.
Okay. Whatever. Well, that's actually a great segue for my next question. My question for you is, what are some essentials, and Dr. Pepper can be included, to bring to the launch site with you, whether you're going on your own or going to a big launch event? What do you bring in?
Yeah. I don't have this dialed in. I don't know that anyone does, but if it, I certainly don't. I've definitely brought, you know, metaphorically, like you bring the whole workshop sometimes, and then sometimes, like, you know, you bring the whole workshop enough times and nothing gets used and your car is a mess and you're like, this is ridiculous. I should just bring the rocket and one igniter and that's it. And like, it's actually never gotten that low. Like, always bring multiple igniters, but yeah, I've gone through phases on it. I generally like anything that can be accomplished with a Leatherman. I won't bring another tool that can do it better. I'll just use the Leatherman and be like, ah, this is just what assembling things in the field is, right? Like, don't bring an electric drill when you can just use the screw head on your Leatherman. And most of this is just about mitigating like space in your car so you could take more people, or so it's less messy. Like, I sleep in my car overnight. Sometimes when I go to far, you just like go the night before. And so you need space in there. But yeah, in terms of like essentials, always keep like any of your, I think like an ammo box is one of the best things you can buy, just to have like a little peace of mind about keeping your charges or your igniters or anything somewhere. Which is not so much like, I would consider that an essential. Bring a camera. Bring the rocket, by the way. I have done one launch. This was like years ago, but I did one launch of one of these like cardboard TVC rockets where I brought everything except for the rocket. And from that day forward, I have had like a packing checklist. And the packing checklist includes the rocket. Huh. Yeah, I'm trying to think of other essentials. What do you guys think? What do you guys have like that is like non-negotiable? You have to bring it.
I was going to say, this is a great one for Taylor's input, because like you said, you're not sure if anybody has it like completely dialed in. If anybody does, it's Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, lately I've been slacking because, or like, I have this set stuff that stays in like my like range boxes that doesn't generally get used unless it's the stuff that goes to a rocket launch and that's it. I try not to touch it. When I'm at home, well, there's been a couple times where I have, and then that ends up burning me because I take something out of there and then it doesn't go back. And then, yeah, just lots of, I kind of had it dialed about 10 years ago, and I haven't added too many things, but I will say the one thing that I did add is a small 12 volt cordless drill. And it is saved, but it's like, I feel like it's not really necessary until you get to a certain point, but it's like everyone's your best friend, and that so many people are like, oh my gosh, does someone have a drill? And I'm like, yeah. You're the drill
step
guy.
Step up with the cape on.
You can.
Yes,
yeah,
I do.
But I think the same is true. If you can get a battery powered Dremel, that will make you like,
yeah,
God at any launch site.
But
that is a changer.
My last first recommendation when people are like, what tools should I get? Like, what power tools for just rocketry in general? And I'm like, the Dremel is pretty much the solution to any problem.
Yeah. Can I steer the question a little bit? Because yeah. I think what do you bring depends on a lot on your like launch preparedness philosophy. So I more and more, it's different for different rockets, but like more and more, I like integrating basically everything at my house so that when I drive out, the rocket doesn't need chutes packed. It doesn't need charges loaded. There's obviously like you travel with big electrical disconnects that like prevent any type of charge from firing, but like the charges are loaded. That's a little sketchier. But like, it depends on your launch philosophy. If you're building a lot more of your rocket, you need to bring a lot more of your workshop. But if you're just showing up with the rocket, you've tested it on, you know, a sample piece of launch rail, you've tested your telemetry or any of your RF stuff, like you can really get away with bringing like the rocket and a camera and, you know, an igniter.
Fanny pack full of electrical tape.
And
yeah, blue tape for sure.
I found when I show up with my full setup, you know, like most of the time I'm not using like most of that stuff, but then every once in a while you get like something where you gotta take your electronics bay apart or something like that, or a rail button pulls out when you're putting your rocket on the pad, and those are kind of the situations where I'm happy to have those things, but. Because I've tried to downsize because I'm like, I bring this stuff and I don't use it. And then it's like, as soon as that happens, I end up with some situation where we need to cut something down or, you know, like an on-site modification. And it just makes.
I will say, though, your vascular, like when the first time I flew with you, when I did my level 3, I was like, I didn't have this. I need to do this. And you're like, that box, that box, that box. And then my minimum diameter. When it was like 10 minutes before the waiver closed and I had swapped out a longer coupler, not thinking about the fact that I had cut the tube so that the motor case would touch the coupler and it was like the perfect length. So I was like, I have 10 minutes of the waiver closed and my coupler is too long. And he's like, there's a hacksaw in that drawer. And I just cut my coupler down and flew it before the waiver closed, which is crazy.
Brayden, have you seen, or Shane, have you seen the box that Bryce from Evolution has?
Yeah, the Milwaukee, like the wheel one.
Yeah.
Dude, that thing is like a pro gamer move. He's this, it's like a toolbox with massive wheels, so you could like take it across some sand or dirt or whatever. And that's his like launch kit. I think that's a pretty good move if you can just have like a toolbox. The problem is it's also expensive too, because like you were saying, Taylor, like, you know, you keep a bunch of tools in there so that you're always ready to go, but then you're home, you either have to put those tools back religiously or you have to buy a second set of tools.
Yeah, so. That honestly crosses my mind all the time. And I almost have done it at this point to just like allocate $100 for Harbor Freight and just like have a dedicated only at the launch site tool set.
But love Harbor Freight.
Oh my God. Yeah. I just bought the belt sander, the like freestanding one.
Yeah.
Oh, whew. Dude, I'm blowing through fiberglass like it's butter here.
It's like genuinely so fun to go there too.
Yeah, it's like a visceral experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like nothing's like unattainably priced. You're like, what? Yeah, I mean, I could probably swing that in a couple months.
I bought an engine hoist from them like 2 or 3 years ago to move a mill around. And I bought it and I was so angry that I had to use that to just for this one thing, and I was like, I'm never going to use this again. And I use that thing all the time. It's awesome. I would never walk under it, but I use it all the time.
It's sick. I mean, because we do car stuff, so we have engine cranes for engines, but like they become applicable, and like I hang stuff from it to paint things. I don't have one here, and there's been multiple times where I'm like, this is like the dumbest use for an engine hoist, but if I had one here right now, it would be fulfilling the need.
Yep.
So yeah, no, it's a Harbor Freight shout out. If you want a sponsorship deal, you know, let us know.
Friend of the pod.
Yeah, exactly. And then
I actually might be going there to get another toolbox for rocket stuff. The one with the workbench on top. I'm trying to get my stuff together to move, but it's like right now everything's on a 16-foot workbench, and so I have this idea that I can consult, because they have one toolbox that has a bunch of kind of like it's all drawers. It does, and then it has like a wood top on it,
like the one I have.
Yeah, but maybe a little bit bigger. I'm not sure.
Okay. I have two more essentials to add. Actually, the first one is extremely important, and it's like a Walmart bottom of the barrel white folding table. Those things, you forget that you need like space to integrate your rocket. You don't want to be doing it on the ground, because depending on where you are, you can get dirt, grass, sand, whatever in your rocket, especially with tight fits. And like, it kind of sucks to be like putting your rocket together in like your trunk or whatever. Yeah. The table is a pro gamer move. And then I have a little camping battery. I don't know how many like kilowatts or whatever. I think it's like a half a kilowatt or something like that, but it's enough to charge your laptop like twice. And if you need to like do open rocket stuff in the field, or if you've got it running telemetry, or just like, I don't know, you never know. Maybe you just like need a charge on your phone or something like that. Right. Having just a little bit of power out there is great.
Yeah, that's true. And I will also throw to go with the table, a canopy, if you somehow, I think we did a whole episode on like launch essentials and didn't bring it up, but the reason I bring it up now is I X'd recently, and it got a decent amount of attention at LDRS when it was super windy. I had one of those like $45 Walmart canopies, and it came with drawstrings on this one, so I held it like a parachute. So I posted that picture, and I was like, pro tip, $50 canopy is the best way to get a 10-foot parachute. Had a little moment there.
Speaking of which, I just bought something new that may be an essential, but we'll have to see how it works. The auger, like tie down things for the canopy. I like tent stakes, but I got some basically the twist in augers, but they have a hex head, so you can use an impact on them.
Okay, that's good.
That's great. Yeah.
Because the ground's always too hard. So yeah, these have a spike. You can hammer it in to start, and then put your impact on it and just drive it straight in.
Can you toss like a link in
please.
The chat here? Like, I'm so serious. I need that.
Dude, yeah, because I know a lot of people will just buy like huge lag bolts and just ram those straight into the ground. I felt so dumb. I bought some of the like cheap coily like auger ones for LDRS at Bonneville, because I was like, yeah, it's salt, it'll be fine. Not understanding that it was basically concrete with salt sitting on top.
Yeah.
Nailed it. All right. Well, I think that pretty much covers up or covers everything we might consider essentials. But this is always a fun one to revisit, because there's always something new. So please, if you're watching this on YouTube or you want to send us an email, it's contact@aggpodcast.com. What are some essentials we haven't talked about? Send them our way.
There's some we're for sure missing. I mean, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that I just can't think of off the top of my head.
The big drums, the sanding drums that you attach to a drill, by the way. If you're flying a 12-inch rocket, Mike, and you have a little bit of moisture.
Also, like, even this is even beyond launch stuff too. If you can grab one of those little, you could even get the self mixing attachment, a little 5-minute epoxy, just like leave it in your car. Yep. You know, that's great. 5-minute epoxy, again, also like much like the Dremel, makes you really popular at the launch site.
And as much CA as you can eat. moving on. Joe, what is your wildest recovery story?
I had a pretty good one recently. This hasn't come out on the channel because I'm super behind, but I had a series of tests. There were three flights, I think, this winter that I've been testing some GNC stuff. So I've got a set of all 3D printed fins. Like the whole can is printed. On the first flight, the goal was just to control the roll axis. So you put, I embedded a servo. The fin, it's a 2-inch minimum diameter rocket, but the fins are a 1/2-inch thick because they have to house a servo. So it's kind of like goofy proportions. That's not super important. They're all flights to about like 3 kilometers, 4 kilometers, you know, it's like 10,000 feet or something, whatever the conversion is. So they're far away. They're far away enough that you like can't really see what's going on in the sky. So you need telemetry. And if your telemetry doesn't work, you need a backup system like a GPS tracker. And if that doesn't work, you need a second backup system like a ComSpec tracker. And I've like flown with like triple redundancy on all of these flights just because like, I don't know, I'm done with having stupid errors. Like there's no reason to not have a couple of backups for the backups.
That's fair.
The last one of these flights that I flew, it had a really clean ascent. It got the parachutes out, but we actually had like, did not really know because the telemetry just like kind of stopped. And we got 2 or 3 packets on the way down that were consistent with like, okay, the parachute's probably out, but we had these GPS coordinates that were complete. It was from far and we had GPS coordinates that pointed us really like a mile east of the far site. And so me and my buddy Thomas, you know Thomas Buska?
Yeah.
Yeah. So a Thomas champion. And I, dude, he's great. He's like come through for me a couple of times too. He's the one who found when I had that flight where the camera fell out at like Mach 3 and 4 kilometers or whatever. He's the one who found that. Like he saved that project.
Oh my God.
That's sick.
Like the standalone little puck camera is awesome.
Shout out to the Boosk.
Yeah,
I don't know if anybody calls him that, but I'm about to start.
I've never heard that. But anyway, yeah, I was like, Thomas, I need help recovering this rocket. Do you want to like hike 2 miles with me? And he was like, absolutely. We looked for this rocket. It was like 1.5 hours of just walking around in the desert. I brought my laptop to try and see if we could like reacquire the telemetry signal. We got nothing. And it was great that we brought my laptop because like in the middle of the desert, we opened up OpenRocket. We're like both sitting on the ground with my laptop, like poking around the descent rates in OpenRocket being like, okay, if we know these GPS coordinates were here at this height with this descent rate, like rerunning simulations, trying to figure out where it was. And it turned out the GPS was like entirely wrong. It was just truly bad data for like the few packets we got. And it was like 1 mile away from far, but south, not east.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, super perfect. And the only way that I know that, the only way that I ever got that rocket back was because the Colorado School of Mines, which is a crazy name for a school, but the Colorado School of Mines had lost a rocket out there, or they had like, you know, we're recovering a rocket, and they found it on the same day, like. And so I'm at far, I'm disappointed. I'm trying to search around the air with my drone and, you know, can't see anything. And over the far speakers, Eric goes, "Mr. Barnard, please see me at the office." And I'm like, oh, damn, this brings me back to like middle school. but they had found the rocket. So that's the most recent one. And then the Lumineer one has always been good too, which is that it went to 10 kilometers. We lost telemetry at 4. And we got it back at 4 kilometers on the way down. It was coming down at like 180 miles an hour or something like that. And we got 3 packets, if I remember correctly, with good GPS data, but it was really high up. And so we spent 3 hours searching the desert because we assumed the main had deployed. So we like calculated the drift from, you know, the winds on that day. We searched the whole area, basically like just walking and seeing nothing. And then as a last-ditch effort, like as the sun was starting to set, we were like, fine, we'll just go to the last GPS coordinates. It was 4 kilometers up. There's no way it's exactly where those coordinates are. And it was exactly there. It was like,
oh my God,
it had been drifting and then the winds shifted like 4 kilometers up. And so it actually like ended up staying straight down from where those last pings were.
That is crazy.
Jesus. Yeah. I don't know, man. I have like bad luck with recovery. The other reason, like, I did fly with backups on that one that the Colorado school found, but my spot tracker shut off at launch. I can't even explain that. It shut off at launch, and then the comm spec, I actually don't think I flew the comm spec on that one. Braden, you and I still have to like look at those LL electronics transmitters.
Yeah. Have you tried one of the ones from Alex though?
No, I need to. I haven't gotten any.
I have a pile of them. They're programmable, so we could switch one out.
Yeah.
Give it a test. But yeah, I was going to say, I thought you were about to tell me the first time I'd ever heard of a CommSpec transmitter like stopping functioning during flight. And I was about to have a heartbreak moment there. But
I did have that, but it was with EBDB2. So it like hit the ground really hard. And the whip antenna, or like, you know, the little tail on it, had was wrapped around itself a couple of times. So I think, like, I don't know that you can really count that as like a failure, you know?
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's kind of like, I had one that I don't know exactly what happened with it, but it it just one day decided it wasn't going to function well anymore. And then Taylor flew to LDRS and it was like completely wrong and then just shut off. And then for some reason, I proceeded to put it on my rocket that was going 20,000 feet and I never saw it again. Who could have guessed, right?
Oh.
Okay, so Taylor and Postart queued up a couple questions here. I feel like I've been hogging, so do you guys want to throw one out?
You or me?
You go.
All right. I put in, oh, where is it? Who have you looked up to throughout rocketry that has kind of like helped you along the path that you're on currently?
That has changed a bunch. Cause it depends on like the phase of a project that I'm in. You know, right now I'm making some big motors. And so like people who are making a lot of motors, I look up to them. Like I try to talk as much as I can with Scott from Loki or John DeMar or, you know, any of these people who have been making motors for a long time, Gary from Aerotech, like, but then, you know, in GNC stuff and in guidance stuff, like I had a whole long call. He was super generous, but with Jim Jarvis last fall. And I really looked up to him. Like, you know, when you're starting down a new path, like the first time you build a minimum diameter rocket or the first time you do a composite fin can, there's so much not nuance, but like there are so many little rules of thumb and tips and tricks. And, you know, you just having never done something before, I get really worried that like, I'm going to mess up every single step. And when I can talk to someone or look at something that someone's done, that makes me like look up to them is like, wow, they figured this out. So, I mean, another great one. And I think, you know, I imagine we can all mostly agree on this, but like Kip DeGurtis is like,
oh yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if you've like seen his build quality in person, but you can see it in photos. And that dude has like left no surface unpolished or like, it's incredible. I think we've talked about this before, but like he got three flights above 100,000 feet back to back with a two-stage rocket. Both stages had drogue and main dual SEP dual deploy. Each one of those flights kept all of its fins on. Each one of those flights had perfect recovery, good telemetry, like, that sounds simple if you're not in rocketry, and it is like so impressive.
Yeah.
And so I look up to him too.
Also, is that how you pronounce his last name?
Yeah, it's DeGurtis. And I still can't like really remember that. Yeah, because it looks like Daugirdas or like.
Yeah, I've been saying it wrong for a long time. So if you're
watching
this,
but that's how he pronounces it,
Kip,
is DeGurtis.
My apologies. Yeah. There's egg on my face.
Jesus Christ.
It's a strange last name. I think you can be forgiven for that. Yeah, what about you guys? Who do you guys look up to? If you don't say me, I'm going to leave the podcast.
Yeah. Joe Barnard actually does some crazy stuff.
Yeah, I've...
Well, the
insane.
Great thing about what Joe does is it's like so in depth and involved that I'm like, I've been curious about that, but never, ever... considered taking the time to make a rocket land like a Falcon 9 booster, because I don't even know where to start. So the fact that Joe's already done it is like a world of terror off of my mind. But yeah, I mean, for Taylor and I, it's definitely like old school big rocket guys, Gates Brothers and Wedge Oldham, and we've been over that plenty of times, but we're glad there seems to be a resurgence in big rockets coming. People are taking interest again.
You know who else is Derek DeVille?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just reread through that Quake document that he put together after the flight. Like, man, dude, like, did it all.
Yeah. Yeah, he's, like, wildly OG, too. He's been around forever.
It is, like, so much easier to build a rocket that goes above 100,000 feet now than it was 20 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and it makes it so much more impressive to do it. Like, there's the rocketry forum, there's discords, there's lots of people who want to talk, and it was so much harder to find people back then, I think, that you really had to, like, have good connections, I think.
Yeah, it's crazy, 10 or 15 too. Years ago, like, it was a lot harder. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, because Jarvis was like one of the first people. He might still be the only person that's ever done it solely with commercial motors and fully recovered everything, as far as I know. But yeah, like when he.
Yeah, maybe.
He so casually posted that his two-stage rocket went like 110,000 feet, and this was like 10, 12 years ago. And everybody's like, is that typo or is that for real? Like,
yeah.
No, that's actually what happened. And he's just like, it's like you said, you talk to him. Jim is just like the most like down to earth guy, though.
Oh my gosh, he's so nice too. Like, and he's not like the traditional stereotype engineer, you know, bland or whatever. I get him on the phone or on Zoom or something like that, and he's like, "Hey Joe, how are you doing? It's great to talk to you, you know, whatever." And it's like, you're just like a nice dude.
Yeah, I used to pester him too, because I, like, when I was really young teenager, I was super into carbon fiber stuff, and he had that carbon fiber Big Daddy. So I used to just email people all the time, and Jarvis is one of the people that was on the list of people that got my barrage of emails. So when my family moved to Texas, I have to think for a split second, he was like, oh no, I have to see this guy in person now. And then the first thing that happened when I met him, he's like, here, check out my rocket. He want to hold this for a second. I got stuff to work on. And just let me talk his ear off forever at a Tripoli Houston launch. So
cool, I think that's dude. Like one of the nice things about rocketry being as much of a niche hobby as it is, like anyone who does this. Oh man, I don't know if you're in the r/rocketry Discord. There was some kid in there a while ago who was like, I don't want to test motors at FAR because it's like a 2-hour drive for me. And people clowned on him really hard because it's like, oh, we are all driving way farther.
Right.
To like do this. And so like most people doing rocketry they really, really like it. And they really, really want to be there, which makes, I think, self-selects for like people who are down to just be like, I'm so excited to share what I'm doing with anyone who wants to talk.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. There's definitely outliers to that, but I would say they're definitely the exception, not the rule. But
any hobby has grumpy old dudes.
Oh, yeah. Taylor, you want to throw out your question?
Sure. I mean, you've done a lot of projects. I'm just curious if you have a favorite or some, you know, what is some of the highlights from the Joe Barnard project collection?
Yeah.
Sounds like a band.
Joe Barnard project collection.
Dude, the sound effects are not going to stop being funny. I think the biggest one, at least right now, is what's in the background here, which is the rocket that landed. It's like, you know, it's the reason that I started doing this. I wanted to see if I could make it work. And I think it's my favorite because you can't like phone in any part of it. You can fly it enough. Like, honestly, there was an aspect of the landing that was just luck. Like, I couldn't get it to do it consistently, at least with the system that I built. So part of it is certainly luck, but you can't do it on luck alone, and you can't get, you know, it has to be like 95% good engineering and thought. And like, I think it's probably the one I would pick as like my favorite, just because Yeah, there's no part of that that you can phone in. I guess like structures, you know, don't matter when you're at the like 1 kilogram scale and going 100 feet. But
that rocket, yeah. Too, like that project kind of exceeded the boundaries of rocketry, because there's been multiple instances where people, like, it comes up that I'm into rocketry and they have no idea about it other than they want to bring up this video they saw where a guy landed one like a Falcon 9 booster.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I know that guy. So that really like eclipsed the
it's like it's almost robotics at that point. Like it felt right. A lot of that project felt more like robotics, or like there's so much software involved too that like you get to spend a lot of time like coding. And for me, I enjoy that. Some people don't, but I remember talking, do you know Charlie Garcia?
The name is familiar.
He was like a mentor of mine for a little while. He's actually younger than me, but he was one of the first people to reach out on the website. He like went to MIT and now he's doing a bunch of stuff in Colorado with InSpace Engines. But anyway, he at the time was like one of the only people, and I'm talking like 2016, one of the only other people in Boston that I knew who were doing rockets. But he was doing like high power P motor minimum diameter with the MIT rocket team. And I remember going to their lab and it was like such a completely different type of rocketry that I was like, oh, I don't actually like, they're both rockets, right? They both like shoot stuff out the back and they go up and come down. But, it was like entirely different, you know? So I almost feel like it's more robotics than it is rocketry.
Yeah. I was going to say it was like a handful of swear words and slightly less, serious voiceover from being a William Osman video.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and your thing worked at the end, which does set you apart. Oh, yeah. There.
Yeah.
I don't think William Osman's ever going to see this, so that's why I'm talking with such confidence.
Yeah, I think you're safe from that.
You got to punch up if you're going to punch, you know?
It's so true. I also think the series I did on the other one in the background, Simplex, it was an O rocket motor. Same thing as Lumineer, basically, which is that I hadn't built a motor before and decided, let's start with something really big. And that I really liked as a project because I filmed every single part of it. And then I followed through at the end, which is hard to do. Like after it fired, I didn't do any real rocket work for like 3 months because I wanted to make sure that I put a bunch of like stuff online as a resource. And although I would build that motor a lot differently today than like when I built it and whatever, I think that's got to be one of my favorites too, because I can point to any one of those videos and be like, this is really like a lot of the stuff that I think is important to know about building motors. Not all of it, and it's not all correct, but
yeah, there's a really great prior to that there's a couple of videos on like mixing motors and stuff, but I think what you did too, and like especially with the when you pulled the MSDS sheet on, I don't remember what it was.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, HX752.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I had like a 2-minute segment where like you can't have kids if you use this.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, there's so much. Like, I mean, when I was younger and I wanted to get into mixing propellant, that I have to assume many people like me are just like, oh, this is the chemicals you need. I'll order them without like really thinking about things like that. So it is very good that you took the time to like really parse all that information out, because
that was exactly the goal too. I'm glad that you said that, because that really was like the thought process. Like, with no shade to the King of Random, like his Sugar Rocket video, you know, has allowed a lot of people to like buy PVC casings and fill them with sugar propellant and then like see what happens. And right. Sometimes what happens is that like the PVC does what PVC does, which is create shrapnel and hurt you.
Yeah.
And so there's like bad information online, and the goal was like, try really hard to A, like talk a lot about safety, and B, try to show like as detailed as possible of a process, because people are going to do this stuff whether you teach them how or they have to figure it out themselves.
Right.
You might as well just like,
that's what I was going to say
out there. Yeah.
Cause there were some people like comments and everything, just, not thrilled that you like posted the formula. And I was like, that's, That's a formula you could just easily Google we can talk and find.
About that if you want. That was a really bad day. MIT, not the rocket team, the college ruined my day at Disney. And I go to Disney about once every 2 years or something. Like me and a bunch of friends get together and we're like, let's go to Disney and Disneyland. And oh gosh, that was so stupid when it happened. I had just published the propulsion or I had just published the propellant making video. And mind you, like, so we were making cherry limeade, which is a propellant made by Charlie Garcia of the MIT rocket team and a couple other people. But this is a propellant that's been online, publicly available, like detailed on their wiki for years, like
right.
5 years maybe. And I just like I had seen reference to it elsewhere. I know that Harry Amadeo has published like a couple of his formulas. I've seen other formulas online, like. Dude, Anthony Cesaroni on like some of those old rocketry forum things is just like wheeling and dealing a bunch of propellant formulas out there.
Yeah, I've seen those posts.
Yeah, I figured like, okay, cool. There's enough things out there that I'm sure it's fine to post formulas. And I got an email from an unnamed person, but like not at like it was at the MIT rocket team, but the real problem was with the higher up people at MIT. Who said Joe is violating ITAR and telling us that we're like by pointing and showing the website that they had published the formula with like on screen, I was at fault because they believed it was not right to publish the formula, which like is just a mess in its own right.
Right.
But mostly it was like there were enough people involved and there were enough like legalese words used that I at Disney, like, and I'm in line for Splash Mountain, man. Like I'm not in the headspace of like traffic, you know, international arms regulations. And I get this email that's like, you are in violation of ITAR. You will take this video down. And like, this is a big problem. And this is not just the MIT college rocket team. This is like the lawyers of MIT.
Oh,
and, and I was like, okay, I hate this. I'm having a bad time at Disney. And it ultimately was fine. Like there is no actual legal trouble. And like when you look through the USML or like ITAR or any of these things, they don't care that much about propellants that are below 260 Newton seconds or 260 seconds of ISP. And that's not so much of a propellant thing. That's also like a it's also like a motor thing, but
right.
Yeah, it doesn't, we don't have to get into it. I just like, gosh, that was such a problem. And so if you watch that video in the early parts of it, you can see there's a weird cut where I like try to mention what the propellant is and it cuts really fast because I had to go into the stupid YouTube editor.
Oh,
the worst editor on the planet and just like chop out the segment where I say this was developed by the MIT rocket team.
Dude, that editor is so counterintuitive. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate it so much. Yeah,
now instead of giving anyone proper credit for the propellant, like, I just look like I'm pulling this, you know, out of nowhere, out of thin air, this propellant called cherry limeade.
You invented it, right?
Yes, I definitely did.
My only regret out of that whole scenario, and now knowing that you were at Disneyland, is that we didn't get a picture of you sad on Big Thunder Mountain Railroad like Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins. Have you seen that picture?
No, what happened?
Great.
He was on Big Thunder and some paparazzi person just took a picture of him and he's like looking right at the camera and just looks so sad and he's on a roller coaster. I'm like,
so funny.
It's amazing.
It's such a Billy Corgan thing to do though.
Yeah, it really is. But all right, well, we've given you enough softballs and we need something that people can get mad at you for.
Yeah.
What are your preferred adhesives?
I am totally willing to just like be wrong here because I haven't really done, I've been meaning to do some tests. I think I will like later in the summer. First I'll say, I think we all need to get more comfy with 5 minute epoxy. 5 minute epoxy is like good enough for a lot of stuff. Yeah, there we go. Let's hear it.
What's wrong with 5 minutes?
You know, I'm talking to myself. I'm not really like upset at anyone else. I'm just like for a long time, I used it was Loctite 9340 Hysol, and that stuff is great. It's just like such a pain to get out of the tubes. It's really, really thick. It's not mm-hmm. see-through. And, you know, for the most part, you don't need the bond strength that like that comes with that. Yeah, so 5 minute, I love. 9340 is like fine. It's just the stuff that I used for Lumineer, and I keep using it because I know it works, and it's expensive, but it's like, you know, it's got good spec sheet stuff on it. JB Weld is great too, by the way. Like JB, yeah, let's get that applause. There we go. as soon as I said that, I saw you, Brayden, going for the button.
Just yeah, I'm on it.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of. Okay, I'll say one more thing, which is I am like more and more a fan of CA, which yes. is a controversial take depending yeah. on like what you're doing with it. I ran on the flights that, again, the video is going to come out in probably a few weeks, but on one of these flights that I did this winter where I've got four fins, each one with a servo embedded inside so we can like control where the rocket's going, you have to run those servo cables up the rocket, right? So I ran them up the rocket, and instead of like covering them with tape or whatever, I used an unholy amount of CA over the cables to just bond them directly to the fiberglass like outer diameter, and it worked. Like you use CA and a little accelerator and you're yes. off to the races.
Dude, I have one of the giant bottles of CA and an aerosol can of accelerator. Yep. You can ask Postart. He was there the day I bought it. It looked like I had just won the lottery. I was so excited about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I was like, look, do you guys ever huge. Think about
like what kind of cancers you're going to get and how you get them? Because like I think it's from the accelerator. It just I wear a yeah. respirator, but it has a smell where I'm like, God, I gotta be doing some good. Type of damage.
We definitely took different routes on that sentence ending there. Yeah. You're like, yeah, it's definitely crazy. I'm like, I'm huffing it, dude. I love it. It's like candy.
Great. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I kind of like the smell, but I also think it's really like I'm like I this smells like cancer.
I think so
I'm aware it's a problem, but I'm not doing anything about it.
Have you ever turned, you know, the compressed air canisters that you use to like clean up dust from stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever turned one of those things upside down and then sprayed it?
Yeah.
No, freeze on mode? Your hand. Yeah.
The whatever happens there, this is another way that I might die in like 30 years or whatever, but like whatever chemical is coming out of there, it's so bad that I can taste it. Like if I walk yeah. into the room, even 20 minutes later, when I've sprayed it upside down, and I'll do it like from time to time, I have a hot glue joint that like needs to cool really, really fast. And I turn it upside down, spray it. It's incredibly cold. It like flash freezes the hot glue.
Yeah.
But then I have to like leave the room and open the windows for 20 minutes, because if I walk in there, I feel it on my tongue.
Oh,
I don't know what that is.
There were kids I went to high school with that would huff air duster to get super high.
I think you're probably safe, yeah, because same here. I know some people that have used it as an inhalant.
Does that get you high?
Yeah, apparently.
Maybe I'm just like missing opportunities to make rocketry way more fun.
But it's like one of the worst damage-wise, I think. Yeah. Worst ways to get high. Like, just blasting brain cells.
It's like huffing paint.
Yeah, I've heard the high doesn't last that long, but it's really intense.
Mm-hmm. So it's not worth it. So any 12-year-olds listening to the podcast, go ahead and don't give that a shot.
Yeah. There's better stuff available.
Okay, no, hold on.
No.
Let's not direct that one at 12-year-olds.
Okay. I've been doing a lot of stuff in the garage. I've been prepping this big motor to fire. And last night I got home and do you know the song Love is a Long Road by Tom Petty?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the song they use for the GTA 6 intro.
Yep.
I have listened to that song 300 times now. Like it is that intro is electric. It's crazy. Yeah. And somehow it timed up in my headphones as I'm like about to RTV some stuff, like a nozzle insert into a nozzle or whatever. And it's like, it's on my headphones. And as soon as the guitars kick in on the intro, I'm like putting on the respirator. And like, I tweeted this, I've never done hard drugs, but like that has to be the closest I've come to that type of high. Putting on the respirator, walking into the garage, being like, I'm about to do some like you know, toxic glue stuff, and Tom Petty is like blaring on the headphones. Woof.
I was gonna say, as soon as you brought this up, I was like, I know where this is going. I saw his tweet this morning.
his ex, you mean?
Oh my gosh, yeah, my post on X. Everything app.
Well, that actually segues us into my last couple questions here. One of them is, what are you working on right now?
I have a big, it's a P motor. So it's 6 inches. It's a little less tall than I am. So it's about, you know, 8 feet, something like that. I'm like 8'5".
Yeah.
Sorry. No. I'm lying. I'm 6'8". But
it's true. I've seen it.
No. It's like 5 feet tall. It's a big motor. And we were talking about this earlier, but it's at the scale where like I have to start really thinking about like, how do you move this thing around? It's enough for one person, but it's like any bigger and you'd be in trouble. So the motor has a bunch of stuff that is like really worrying to me, which is a great intro to what this project is. I made a motor last year called Simplex, Simplex V1. It was an O motor. It used cherry limeade propellant, and we kept the pressure in there really, really low. Like, it's a big motor, but it was overall like a very tame motor. This one's not. This one is... it's closer to like 700 PSI, which is, you know, that's like in the amateur range. That's fine. But it's a thin wall case, which is worrying. The liner is not a regular phenolic liner anymore. I spun cast the liner. So I worked with Harry Amadeo and a couple other people to come up with a liner formula with like Kevlar fibers and little ceramic balls and all sorts of stuff in there to try and ablate really well. So it forms like a char layer. It's a mess, and I'm super worried about it. Like, you're getting me in the last, I don't know, 5 days before I fire this thing, and I'm doing the thing where, like, there's nothing that will change if the motor works or not at this point. Like, that was set in stone 2 weeks ago, and or a week ago or whatever. And, like, I'm just in the phase where I have so much time to think about all of the ways that this could not work. And I really feel like I've covered it. Like, so that's the big thing I'm working on now. And I completed a series of GNC tests of like fin control tests this winter. And I haven't made any videos on that yet. They're coming. After this motor fires, I'm going to take a few weeks and just like publish a bunch of videos.
Sick.
I mean, Braden, you have to be like well aware of this too. Like, I'm starting to feel like, man, I should just open OBS, turn on my webcam, start talking, and then like after 20 minutes, I hit upload. Like, no editing.
That's nothing. Like, I know you're on my Patreon now, but you see the video I did at FAR last weekend?
No, not yet.
I straight up just like shot a vlog intro and like no editing. Like, I was interviewing people about their rockets, and I just left in all the clips of me talking into the back of my microphone, just like full raw vlog style. And people were like, this is great. We love it. And I was like, damn it. Why'd I buy all this camera? What am I doing?
Yeah, man. It's fun to make really high quality videos, not to toot my own horn, but like, it's fun to spend a couple of days on like a really fancy edit where you come out of it being like, I made like a good film, you know?
Right.
And it's also like not sustainable for the type of stuff that we do. Cause like, I don't know. There's like some of these videos are just not going to do well. Like, I'm not going to be able to compete. I'm never going to be able to compete with Mr. Beast. No one is, but like, you know, I have a whole video that I want to do about CFD where I'm just like showing screenshots of CFD and like, I don't think a lot of people are going to be that interested in it.
Yeah. And it is like so much more taxing than people think to sit there and edit.
I mean, and so like, what's the point of trying to script out this big video with like a plot and a narrative or whatever, when I can just like, it won't do as well, but like I could just sit down, put it out there. And like one of my main goals with the BPS stuff is like to create a resource, and it doesn't have to be that you like follow it step by step. In fact, you really should not. But like more information out there about like, here is what I did. It worked this well, or it didn't work, or whatever. And so like videos where I just sit in front of a webcam and I'm like, I did this project. I'm going to talk about it for 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it is always nice if you do kind of put out something that's way more laid back. Like, when we get together to launch, I usually do, like, a secondary video of just us talking and hanging out. Yeah. And we do these live streams from Taylor's house and stuff. People are, like, very into it. But,
yeah, I
definitely get it. It was really rough for me when I was producing these high-end, you know, 4K A7 on a gimbal videos for work. And then...
Yep.
Having zero motivation to sit here and edit all day for Rocket videos. So, yeah, it's definitely a balancing act. But
and it's tough, too, because, like, I don't really enjoy editing. But as soon as I start editing, my scope balloons out. You know, I realize that, actually, this section would do good with an animation. Or this section would do well with, like, me completely reshooting the video.
Right.
And so it's like counterproductive.
I kind of had a similar thing where I just had a Ford Mustang that I did a review. And it's like the first time I've had a press car since I wasn't working in the automotive industry anymore. So I shot all this footage.
And that's the Mustang that you drove exclusively, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's.
I talked to Shane about this a little bit.
But so I... Like, I drug my heels for, like, a week and a half sitting on all this footage that I was so happy with. And then, like, 3 minutes into the edit, I had, like, edited the first minute. I was like, Shane, get in here. This is so sick. And I'm, like, back into it. And then when it's done, I'm finished with it. I'm like, that is awesome. I don't want to do that again for 2 months.
Dude, you know what else is a problem for me? Is when I'm editing, if I get a section, like, particularly well done or that I'm really jazzed about... I'll watch it like 30 times and it's a waste of time because what I'm actually doing is I'm like trying to enjoy the final product when it's not done. And so I'm getting, it's like when you tell someone I'm going to start working out a bunch and then you start, you like get a little bit of the sensation of like, I've accomplished something, but you haven't done anything at all.
Right.
And so I spend a lot of time rewatching the edit when I really should be just like pushing forward. And my buddy Andrew did a big video. He has a project about like filming the eclipses that happen on Earth. And he did a really big video a couple months ago. And he said he didn't let himself watch the whole thing until he had like a first pass of the whole thing. So like he wouldn't let himself watch, you know, any part of it until he had cut the whole thing together.
That's a smart way to do it. I kind of do that to some extent, and then I'm irritated when there's something that I'm like, oh, now I have to go back and fix this.
Yeah.
It's definitely a balancing act, but... All right, well, I've got one more question here for you. The P-Motor, Simplex, all this stuff is no secret. This is the path to you putting a rocket in space. You've been pretty open about that.
Yeah.
But since that's going to go perfect... space is easy is what too. People
can
say.
Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
I mean,
and once yeah, congratulations to do that already, on the first by try, the way. Really?
Yeah. And do you know what else is interesting? Like, none of these motors are going to blow up. There's going to be, like, no hardship along the way.
That's so sick, too, because, like I said, people say space is hard all the time. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
I haven't done it yet, but it seems pretty easy to me.
Yeah, it's people have, so clearly it's possible. But anyway.
It's because you're built different.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Cut from that fabric.
Anyway, sorry Joe for interrupting. Is, yeah.
Sorry, I just multiple times a day I think about the blue tape on the...
Yeah.
The mill? Yep.
The mill, yeah. And I always love that.
The thing that you don't see in the video is that there was one like pretty harrowing incident that made me really be like, oh, this is no longer tenable. And it was milling the forward closure for that motor. I had put it down, same blue tape thing, and it was like a half inch end mill or something. So like you're really cutting a lot of material.
Yeah.
And I had been using coolant. And the coolant had seeped down into the blue tape. Mm. And the blue tape is a little porous. So it started to let go. The end mill, like, cut into the piece of material, basically grabbed the whole closure, whipped it around a couple of times, and it, like, flung out the mill.
Oh my god.
and so I went on I like didn't even care that it was going to be expensive because it's McMaster, but I went on McMaster and was like, I need toe clamps delivered tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah.
You are anyway. You're cut from that fabric, as we were just discussing. But since it's all going to go perfectly, after it does, where do you go from there? What's on the other side of the space shot?
I think about that a lot. Because it's really nice to have a long-term goal. It's great as like a story for the YouTube stuff too. Like it was great as a story to have like this kid wants to land a rocket. And so like most of the things he's doing minus hot glue or whatever, like most of the things he's doing, the meta story is like, he wants to land a rocket. And now the meta story is like every single video, it's getting annoying in my head, but every single video you hear me say the phrase, I'm building a space shot, a rocket that goes above 100 kilometers.
Right.
Like you can probably find like 8 instances of that so far, but that's the meta story now. And so, yeah, you either, like if I want to keep doing YouTube stuff, I need a new goal. I don't think it's like that fun to just be like, now I just make random stuff. Right. With like no hate to William Osman, like, what's the meta story there now? Like, you know, it just like a video comes out every 6 months where it's like, okay, so he bought like a bulldozer, I guess. Like,
yeah.
And yeah, so you need like, I don't know what it will be, but I have some ideas. I don't know that I want to keep making videos as a job. It gets old. Brayden, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
It does get old. And it would be nice to just like start a consulting business or something. I don't know. And it would just be like aerospace consulting or whatever. That would be cool. I do think, and this is a much harder path, I think there is a pretty compelling business case for building much cheaper ICBM interceptors. And I have like a list of like 10 people that I would instantly hire to go like do that as a team. And that would be pretty cool. Like, and there's literally no scientific value to be gained from me doing a space shot. You know, I'm not going to like learn anything new that we don't already know. It's a vanity project, basically.
Right.
Like it's for, you do a space shot because you want the glory. And with that, like part of the goal is like, okay, cool, I could do this really hard thing and then maybe capitalize on that, get some like venture capital, and then go do like an intense startup thing. But I don't know, you know, maybe I just go like make another carbonated milk video.
Yeah. Maybe take your space shot motors and big giant hot glue rocket, you know?
I'll tell you what I'm like not really interested in is this like suborbital sounding rocket thing that like a couple companies have tried to do, where you try to sell sounding rockets to the government, or you sell flights for like 4 minutes of zero G or whatever. Like I really, working for customers is kind of not a super fun thing. And I think you lose a lot of the magic of building rockets if you're building a rocket that has to work every single time.
Right.
I don't really know. Go ahead.
That's kind of like you said, the space shot thing is just a vanity thing, but it is on the grand scheme of things. Like, obviously, you have taken a different path in rocketry than the one that we have, where, you know, we're not pushing any envelopes that haven't been pushed by dozens and dozens of people.
No one else has used that much JB Weld on one rocket, as far as I know.
It's so expensive. No. Too, like, you talk about Hysol, I'm like, my god, I think I spent like $27 on the fillets on this rocket I just built. But I mean, it's all like, people have done 12-inch rockets with 7 motors before, but it's just something that we thought was cool and wanted to do. And it is, I feel like, important to keep in mind that at the end of the day, there's nothing pushing you to do it other than it's something you want to do. So I'm glad that you don't have that complex that, like, like, this is, I go down in glory for this.
I have, yeah. Without
taking it too seriously.
I'm like, oh, I guess. look, thumbs I can up. Make balloons if I do one of these too. Oh no, that's confetti.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like an Apple thing. I think this one's lasers. Sorry, if you're an audio listener, you're not gonna.
This is incredible.
it's like a thing in all of the latest Apple software or whatever. And it's really funny because I'll be having like a serious conversation with someone on FaceTime where, like, you know, it's like intense and like kind of emotional. I'm like, here's what I think. Number one, whatever. Number two, I think you need to like really think hard about whatever. And then, you know, the balloons come up or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jesse Uliberry was on our podcast, and he, like, at the end of it, he was just like, I'm actually, and then the thumbs up thing yeah. popped up.
It was so funny.
So hilarious. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, what I was going to say is, I'm not going to name names, but, like, there are some people who want to do space shots that take it extremely seriously in a way that's, like, we are pushing so many boundaries and like it's groundbreaking and extremely impressive all around it, you know, and it's all this language that's like, are you a company trying to like sell me on like how I should buy your stock or buy your product or whatever? And like, it's just not, you know, it's a vanity project. You don't yeah. like, and the easy litmus test for that is if you get to 99 kilometers, the difference between that and 100 is 100%. It's
right.
Like, no one says you did a successful space shot if you get to 99 kilometers, and there is no meaningful difference in the science that you do there than the science that you do 100.
Right.
So it's a glory thing, which is, I think it like, you know, if you're honest about that, just being like, I think it's cool and it's a milestone that I want to hit and that's the reason, then like, you know, that's great. That's the reason people do rocketry, right? Like, you don't fly almost any of the stuff that you fly because you want to like push scientific boundaries. You do it because like, oh, this brings me a lot of joy. Like I have a lot of fun, like working with my friends and building stuff and going out to the site and like seeing some fire.
Yeah. As dear friend of the podcast, Dr. David Reese once said, rocket yeah. goes whoosh, and then it makes me happy.
David's yeah. great. David was one of the taps for my L3.
Oh, no, yeah. David's amazing. Yeah, cool.
Mm-hmm.
But
anyway, yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that. But, like, after the space shot, I don't know what I'll do. I don't think I have to worry about that because, like, space shot is, like, minimum 2026 and, like, probably a little further off than that. There's a lot of work to do.
Well, it gives you time to think about it. I yeah. say, for those people that are taking it very seriously, let's get a little Agent of Chaos Act going here. We'll petition to raise the Karman line to 110 kilometers.
Yeah.
And you can't be grandfathered in.
Yeah.
Oh, everyone has to redo it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
run it back. Sorry. But, all right, well, that pretty much wraps it up on my end, unless you guys want to throw something else out.
I'm all out.
All right, yeah, well.
This has been great. Thank you guys for having me on again.
Yeah, thanks for being here. It was a good time. Your first repeat guest.
Woo!
My name is Braden Carlson. You can find me right here on YouTube at Rocket Vlogs and on Instagram and X at BigB1011.
My name is Taylor. And you can find me on YouTube at The Rocket Channel.
My name is Shane or Postheart. You can find me on YouTube at Postheart Propulsions and also now actually working rocketrypicks.com.
Yeah. Rocketrypicks.com. It's his birthday soon when you're seeing this. Go buy yourself some fun wall art. Give Postheart a little pocket change for his birthday.
And my name's Joe Barnard, and you can find me online at BPS Space on YouTube.
Don't look
at the Twitter. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We are the Anti-Gravity Group, featuring Joe Barnard. This is the Anti-Gravity Group podcast. and we will see you next time.